welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton. All right, well, on that note, man, it's a kind of somber moment in history. Maybe it often is, but so Russia's invading Ukraine right now. It's been a few days or whatever, and nobody knows the end of that. So kind of somber and weird. And anyway, here we go. Welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. The world is often somber and weird, and I'm a little maybe overly somber sometimes, but okay. Well, welcome to the Should Be Known podcast. It hasn't been too long, so that's good. The last episode was on kind of the source of psychological principles, and we talked about how really if you're looking for true principles for anything, but especially psychology, to me, you really should look in the scriptures. That's what I would submit. Things like astronomy, there's stuff about astronomy in the scriptures, and you should definitely look at that if you're interested in that and pay close attention to that and work that into whatever you're studying. Same with medicine and, I don't know, maybe different fields. But, boy, psychology is, you might as well, psychology is like life. It's a branch of science or something we kind of like to say, but really, I mean, we're talking about psychology all the time, and it occurred to me that, you know, in Sunday school and half the time we're really talking about psychology, and, you know, we're talking about our friends and just talking about life and our kids and people, you know, who has a crush on who, and, you know, it's all psychology. You're talking about, you know, obviously mental health issues and people who act strangely and do weird things or sad things or whatever. Anyway, psychology is a broad field, and surprisingly, the scriptures, not surprisingly, the scriptures have a lot to say about what people do and why they do it. And I kind of think that kind of clinical experiments in psychology are mostly unnecessary. I think they're important for some things, some fields maybe, but psychology, I mean, we're kind of swimming in it. It's all around us. All you kind of have to do is look, to me, I think in the vein of Albert Einstein, where he basically did thought experiments. He didn't do any experiments himself. You realize that, right? I mean, he kind of observed and, you know, maybe some experiments people had already done and theories people had already put forth, and you just kind of have to think about it. And that's kind of how I feel about psychology. I don't think we have to do some dumb experiment with, you know, college students. I guess college students, because people who experiment or work at colleges, I don't know, or anywhere else. Could there be an exception to that? Possibly. But for the most part, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. So yeah, we talked about the source of psychological principles and talked about the Word of God and scriptures, and which is a subset of the Word of God. So I hope you enjoyed that. Hope you listened to it and interested to know your thoughts. Today, I just have a couple things in mind. One is, how do we put this all together and actually help explain, you know, these phenomena that we're specifically considering, namely depression and anxiety? And there's, of course, others. Schizophrenia always comes to mind, and there are other psychological issues, but those cover a lot, I think. So how do we explain how a person gets depression. I really think we need to get to where we can explain it front to back, back to front, understand the different pieces of it as much as we can. I think there are a couple gaps, but anyway, we're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk about this principle of human action, which is faith, and how that plays into psychology, should play into psychology. So yeah. All right, so I'm going to do my best, guys. Hope you can stick with me, but I mean, obviously if you don't want to, don't. But I hope you do. That's all I'll say. Okay, so how would we explain how these things come to be, like depression, like low self-esteem and, you know, anxiety and whatever else? I was despairing a little bit the other day because I don't feel like I have a great grasp on the whole thing, and it overwhelms me a little bit. But then I started thinking, and maybe we have more of it than we think, than I think. So I was thinking about Wendy Traynor. We talked about her in one of the previous episodes. Can't remember the number, but she's in the title of the podcast episode. And her kind of definition of depression, which was, it's a rejection of the self. And I've been thinking about this principle that a person can love oneself or not love oneself, accept oneself or not accept oneself. And I am wondering if that's really totally the same as you would love someone else or kind of despise them, maybe. And I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe it's exactly the same, and maybe it's different in some way. I don't know, but I've definitely felt great love for other people. I've felt, I would say, the love of God for another person. And I've had the distinct impression that it was how God felt about that person. And in some degree, at least, I think his love is more than we are capable of, obviously. But I've felt a great love for people and have felt, wow, where did that come from? And my strong impression is that that comes from God. And I have come to kind of believe that all our love of each other basically comes from God. It doesn't come directly from us, technically. But anyway, can you feel toward yourself the way you feel toward another person who you love with the love of God? And I'm wondering if I've ever, you know, felt a great love for myself. And maybe this isn't the time to go into that. Basically, I'll just leave it at saying, I don't know. I'll continue thinking about that. And maybe you have an answer or somebody does. But I think it's a worthwhile question. Because if depression is a lack of love for oneself, or kind of enmity toward the self, or rejection of the self, as Wendy Traynor says, then obviously, I mean, that's important to know, right? It means that in order to not be depressed, we can't kind of despise ourselves, not accept ourselves, or whatever it may be, can't have enmity toward ourselves. And whether we call that a cause or just a factor, I don't know. Of course, the way I'm thinking about it, factor meant everything has many factors that are many causes, as you'd say. And if you say something is the cause, it's basically just drawing attention to that one factor as standing out from the rest. But really, it doesn't change the fact that there are many factors in any causal relationship. That makes sense. We talked about that before one time, but that was a repeat. So, self-rejection. Let's see. I'm going to read my notes here. If that's all it is, in essence, failing to love ourselves, which is the lie I've been talking about, I've turned it as thinking we're worthless or whatever, then we just have to make the connection between there and all the resultant symptoms of depression, mental and physical. Can we do that? Or can we at least make an attempt? Maybe we don't have to understand exactly how all the physical stuff comes to be, just make a good case that mental stuff causes all kinds of physical stuff, using plenty of real-world examples. There are plenty. And for now, we might have to leave it at somehow these mental states sink in and dig in and become a pattern and a habit and an addiction, really, and affect our physical being. Somehow, the body and the mind are tied such that the one affects the other in ways we might not expect or understand. I think everybody knows that, right? Even most doctors that are in a really kind of sterile scientific mindset, everybody's got to acknowledge that, okay, somehow emotions, the mind affects the body and the body affects the mind. And we don't understand those connections exactly. I guess if you're strictly a sterile scientist, you might say, well, the mind is nothing different than the body. Which, of course, is an idea we reject here, because we know we have a spirit. And the mind will continue on when the body's dead. And then it'll be resurrected, of course, but that's another discussion. Let's see. Okay, so this thing about mental stuff causes all kinds of physical stuff. I'm thinking of people I know who have kind of physical symptoms, but no doctors have been able to figure out anything physical that's causing that. You hear me? Do you know somebody who has some, physical symptoms, pain somewhere in the body, or whatever else, maybe even be handicapped and unable to function or even walk or something, and no doctor has been able to identify any physical reason for that? I think you could come up with a lot of examples like that. It wouldn't be hard to look around and find those. And then you'd be kind of forced to realize, hey, mental stuff causes physical stuff. And obviously, we're affected by the, stuff that does have an identifiable physical cause will affect us mentally, right? Put us in a bad mood or make us, physical suffering definitely is a factor, I'm going to say, in our mood and mental state. Now, do you have power to rise above that? You actually do, technically. But you're not always going to be able to. But technically, you do. Okay, continuing on. Would we even have habit and addiction like we do if it weren't for our physical body or learning and proficiency? It's hard to know what life would be like without a body, right? Because we don't remember that time. And we don't, we don't know anything but being with a physical body. So, but I kind of doubt there would be, addiction and habit and maybe certain kind of ability to learn and become proficient at things if we didn't have a body. Let's see. I really think we should know how these things come to be if we're going to know what to do to get out of them. Yeah, that was a separate thought. Like, one is we need to understand these things, but really, it would be best if we really understood them, we'd be able to describe how it happened, like from our youth, how our mental illness or whatever came to be, or any mental, weirdnesses or difficulties. Not necessarily to the degree of an illness. We need to be able to track how these things develop from one's youth. And then I started thinking about it, trying to go through it. You start innocent. You start without any addictions, psychological illnesses, bad habits, preconceived notions, no sexual orientation, none of that. No coping strategies, good or bad, nothing. By the way, yes, I did say no sexual orientation, because I don't think you start life with any sexual attraction to anybody. I think when we're newborn babies, that hasn't developed yet, right? Isn't that reasonable to think that and think that that develops as time goes on? So, yeah. Anyway, continuing, no coping strategies, good or bad, nothing. You have who you are and have been for eons, and you'll have that all throughout your mortal life and again throughout eternity, right? We have our basic intelligence or whoever we are. So we start out life with that, and we have this brand new body to house our spirit that we need to learn to control and subject to our spirit. And we have a lot to learn through the world because we forgot everything. So when we start mortal life, we are innocent. We're made innocent. Before that, I don't know if we were. You know, I mean, we made choices before this life, but somehow we got a fresh start. It's like everybody got a fresh start, good or bad, faithful or less faithful. We all start fresh in this life. Okay, so as you grow up, what? Something happens to our psychology. Something happens between the time that we're completely innocent and trouble-free and carefree and free of psychological issues. Something happens between then and when we get those psychological issues. We can get them when we're young, too. We can be little kids. But we don't have them when we're born. And when we're conceived, we don't have anything. So, yeah, something happens between nascency and whenever we develop our psychological illnesses, okay? Depression and anxiety. Okay, well, we'll continue working on that explanation. We definitely should try to do that, make an attempt to explain how that happens. And there's lots of common sense understanding of how psychological issues develop, isn't there? I kind of think so. I don't think they're necessarily encapsulated in the theories of psychology at this point, but I think there's, yeah, some common sense explanations. So we'll work on that. All right, it's time for a little musical break. Okay, well, how are we doing? Poking in the dark a little bit. All right, maybe I should act more confident in these things and just see where that gets me. Don't have to pretend I know, but yeah, just a thought. All right, so moving on to another little topic. I mentioned how I was going to talk about faith. Right, as a principle of human action, a principle of psychology, which, by the way, you know, you won't see, I've never read faith as being a principle of psychology in any psychology book, but these lectures on faith say it is like the basic motivator or whatever. I'll just read it to you, see what you think and see how we're going to connect this to anxiety and depression and anything else. So in the lecture first, it's called Lecture First, there's seven, it says the following. The author of the Epistle to the Hebrews in the 11th chapter of that epistle and first verse gives the following definition of the word faith. Now faith is the substance, assurance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. From this we learn that faith is the assurance which men have of the existence of things which they have not seen, and the principle of action in all intelligent beings. I'm not totally sure where it got that second part from that scripture, but I'm going to run with it a bit. Okay, if men were duly to consider themselves and turn their thoughts and reflections to the operations of their own minds, they would readily discover that it is faith, and faith only, which is the moving cause of all action in them. That without it, both mind and body would be in a state of inactivity, and all their exertions would cease, both physical and mental. It's pretty strong, right? Saying if we didn't have faith, we wouldn't do anything. We wouldn't try anything. All our exertions would cease, both physical and mental. So this might be a different, you know, concept of faith than what we may be used to or you may be used to. All right, next paragraph. Were this class to go back and reflect, this class, I guess, refers to people who are learning from these lectures. Were this class to go back and reflect upon the history of their lives from the period of their first recollection and ask themselves, what principle excited them to action, or what gave them energy and activity in all their lawful avocations, callings, and pursuits? What would be the answer? Would it not be that it was the assurance which we had of the existence of things which we had not seen as yet? Was it not the hope which you had in consequence of your belief in the existence of unseen things which stimulated you to action and exertion in order to obtain them? Are you not dependent on your faith or belief for the acquisition of all knowledge, wisdom, and intelligence? Would you exert yourselves to obtain wisdom and intelligence unless you did believe that you could obtain them? Would you have ever sown if you had not believed that you would reap? Would you have ever planted if you had not believed that you would gather? Would you have ever asked unless you had believed that you would receive? Would you have ever sought unless you had believed that you would have found? Or would you have ever knocked unless you had believed that it would have been opened unto you? In a word, is there anything that you would have done, either physical or mental, if you had not previously believed? Are not all your exertions of every kind dependent on your faith? Or may we not ask, what have you, or what do you possess, which you have not obtained by reason of your faith? Your food, your raiment, your lodgings, are they not all by reason of your faith? Reflect and ask yourselves if these things are not so. Turn your thoughts on your own minds and see if faith is not the moving cause of all action in yourselves. And if the moving cause in you, is it not in all other intelligent beings? Okay, and that's the end of that paragraph and the end of what I'm going to take from that. So I have to think about this still. I have to think about this. I've read this before. It makes sense to me. It makes sense to me mostly. But there's one little thing in there. What gave them the energy and activity in all their lawful avocations, callings, and pursuits? What would blah, blah, blah. Okay, lawful. Lawful avocations. So what about the unlawful ones? What about the unlawful ones? Because people are motivated to do bad stuff too, right? So they must have, there must be a motivation to that. And I guess, I mean, that's going to be evil. Let's see, you know, if you hit somebody or steal something or do something selfishly or whatever, and maybe the answer to that is, you know, the devil incites to do everything bad. That all comes from him. And God incites to do everything good. And that all comes from him. I'd have to think about that a little bit. But if this paragraph is talking about lawful avocations, then there's got to be an explanation for the unlawful ones. And maybe it's not that complicated. It probably is pretty simple. It's probably just, you know, you're either motivated by faith or you're motivated by you know, fear slash, you know, selfishness slash whatever else evil. Fear is, in this context, doesn't come from God. Fear of God does, but that's a different kind of fear, I'd say. So, yeah. But what do you think about that? So everything we do is, or basically that's the definition of faith, that it's things that you don't see, but you believe are true. So, okay, I'm hungry. I don't have any food, but I believe that if I take these actions, I will obtain food. I mean, that's a basic thing. A lot of people wouldn't consider that a spiritual principle, maybe, but they're saying here that that's it. So, all right, well, you consider that, I'll consider that, and we'll meet back up some other time to see where we are. So, that's all I kind of had. Got some other notes here I still haven't gotten to, but we'll have to hit those another time. Okay, guys, well, this is the Should Be Known podcast. I'm Clayton Pixton. Hope you have a good day, and we'll call this one good.